Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. I am Naomi.
And I'm Andy.
And we are a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, period, we answer a couple different questions from a couple different listeners.
Yes, folks, this is the show going forward. And by the way, I would like to say...
Have you noticed?
Have you noticed?
Changes.
Ew, a little Bowie, Naomi. I did not know anything about David Bowie before. Because, like, when I was a kid, he was just the guy that went on tour with Nine Inch Nails. And I was like, who's this British geezer? And then I found out, and then I heard Changes and Hunky Dory, and I'm like, this is amazing. Wait, this is that guy? This is the guy that was on tour with, I'm Afraid of Americans. True.
I mean, who is it?
Who is it?
He was the first one to say it. And I'm like, thank you for your bravery.
But, yes, Changes. The Changes you are talking about, we are now on Acast.
Yes, we are on Acast, a podcast network that sells advertisements for
us.
Yes. Now, that's the relationship.
Now, most of you are just like, we don't care. But some longtime listeners who may have like heard of the Cirrus that we dealt with our last network.
Yep. That shall remain nameless.
That shall remain the Voldemort of the podcast world. Shall be unnamed. You know, why would you do this again? Well, I'll tell you why. Because Acast, very nice people, but they just sell ads. And I'll tell you what. I have been editing this show since we left Voldemort, the Voldemort Network.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I'm fine at it. But we needed to... Let's say hire a professional to put this thing together.
And hiring a professional costs money, and we can get money for the professional by splitting the ad sales with someone.
Yeah. Yes.
In walks Acast.
In walks Acast and just throws wads of ones at our feet.
Wads of nickels.
Wads of nickels.
You guys, also though,
unloads a sack of nickels at our feet.
For real though, you know, we want to thank our Patreons. You guys have, you know, we always say y'all keep us afloat, and that ain't no lie, okay?
Yes.
I still feel like y'all are 90% of the battle, even with our new, I wouldn't even call Acast a daddy. I would call them like an auntie. Even with new auntie Acast.
I'm going to say 98%. We are supported by the Patreon, and we appreciate
you. We appreciate you. We love you. We value you. And I guess that's all I wanted to say. I just really wanted the Patreon to know that. So, quite honestly, can we please talk about our guest and also dear friend?
Oh, yes. We will never talk about, unless Acast does us dirty, we will never mention them again after this.
You've already heard his dulcet tones in the introduction. Today, we are helping you handle your scandal with Elliot Glazer, writer, actor, comedian. You know Elliot from his work. He's been a writer on Younger, New Girl. He's been on Broad City. I mean, he's giving us all of it, okay? He also hosts the show Haunting Renditions, where he sings like an angel, reimagines pop songs.
That's where I fell. I think I mentioned in this episode, but I think that's where I first fell in love with him.
That
was hearing
vocal.
Him. Yes, he did a rendition of a Billy Joel song.
Uh-huh.
And up to that point, I had been very hostile towards Billy Joel.
I know. Well, when he kind of rearranges it and strips it down, he really makes these pop songs sound very highbrow. My personal favorite is Bugaboo by Destiny's Child.
But old friend of ours.
Also the co-host of the podcast, You're Making It Worse.
With H. Allen Scott, Brent Sullivan, Elliot, three wonderful gents. I can't say enough good things about these people. Elliot, though, I will say, no offense to H. Allen or Brent. Elliot's closest to our heart.
Wow. Okay. Well, you just made it a competition. You know what I mean?
Hey,
closest.
H. Allen, Brent, step it up. Of course, before we get into the episode, Naomi, I believe you are also hosting another podcast at this moment.
Oh my God, Andy, that is wild that you say that because that is factual. That's actual and factual. I co-host the podcast I Love a Lifetime Movie with comedian Megan Gailey, and it is what you think it is. We recap Lifetime movies, and it is a good time. These movies are wild, okay? We have talked about the movie Deadly Misconduct, Deadly Mile High Club, Sleepwalking in Suburbia, Pool Boy Nightmare. We actually have Andy coming up on a future episode where we watch the movie My Husband's Deadly Past. So you can sign up for that wherever you like to get your pods. It is a good time.
And one other thing. Now, over the pandemic, we were doing a Twitch show every Wednesday. And we're going to do the final regular one. We'll be doing these intermittently from now on. But the final regular one is tomorrow.
May 26th.
2 p.m. PST. We're pulling out all the stops. There's going to be a special video I show that I think will knock everyone's socks off. So if you want to tune in, if you're not back at work yet, it's at 2 p.m. PST at twitch.tv/couplestherapypod. Hope to see you there. Join the group.
Join group.
It's been rejuvenating over this pandemic. And I truly treasure the community that we built around the show. So I think that's about it. Enough schmaltz. There was a lot of schmaltz in this
intro. A lot of schmaltz, okay? Speaking of rejuvenating, let's get to Elliot.
Roll it! We said before... I said before we started that I already had this interview in my head because I know you pretty well, Elliot, and we have broken bread before. Here's my new rule, by the way. Don't stop me on the street if we haven't broken bread together. That's my new rule.
Right.
If we've seen each other casually at a party, you can say hi and we go on our separate ways. If we've had a meal before.
Yeah. Then you stop.
Then you can stop and say hello.
That's
and
fair.
I think I would let, look, I'm trying to get rid of all the gray areas in society so that we all know the social rules. So no one's at a party being like, oh, am I being awkward? Am I being, I don't know what I'm doing. All right. So, but if we just had like a whole set of rules to follow,
that's
that
right.
Get rid of all that social awkwardness. And now, you would know.
Yeah. Did you break bread or did you break matzah this week?
Let's sidestep that question. I'll answer. Here's the deal. This is the deal. I'm a vegetarian, and I found a couple years ago that Passover was inordinately difficult with my diet. And so I said, I'm an adult. I can choose whether I keep Pesach or not. And I chose correctly, like Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail. I chose correctly.
I don't mean it as like guilt. I don't follow Passover, but I was just curious.
He feels a little guilt.
No. I was not reacting to you. When
you said that,
I saw a visage of my dad talking back.
Yeah. They'd prefer you do, I assume. But I'm over it. I also feel, with the COVID of it all, it's like, if I even had the inkling of wanting to do it before this year, not even being able to go to like a Seder, fuck it. No.
Yeah.
No. Although I did ask my dad and he forgot to send me chocolate covered macaroons from the ShopRite near my grandma's house on Long Island. Macaroons are the most incredible macaroons you have ever tasted.
Really?
And they're always from ShopRite. Uh-huh. And they're not fancy. They're just literally perfect. And I forgot. And I'm like, do I hold a grudge? You know, do I get mad at my dad?
Let it go. Larry's got enough going on.
He does.
I think you have to let it go. But can we talk about how sometimes like grocery stores will just have like a random ass good food? Yeah, meaning, like, of something course. They make themselves. Like, for instance, that Wegmans near your parents makes the best whitefish salad I've ever had. And I've been to, like, and then back in, because I had whitefish salad for the first time in Pennsylvania. And it was, like, grocery store whitefish. And I was like, this is delicious. I come to New York, honey. I go to Zabar's. Disgusting.
No.
You know why? Because it's got, I don't like celery in it. I don't like the onions and stuff. Like, they put stuff in it at other places.
Yeah. I also want to take down Zabar's. I want to take down these big New York delis because I think they got too much power and the food does not, the quality of the food is not up to the branding of the business.
I feel such a warmth toward Jewish food, you know, culturally, that it's hard to disappoint me, but when it happens, boy, am I disappointed. Boy, oh boy. My parents are in Florida, of course. Now they have a condo there, so they, you know, snowbird and go back and forth between New York and Florida. And there's this place that I loved growing up called 3G's in Fort Lauderdale. And my mom's like, it's disgusting. Like, they're so over it. And I'm like, it's not that. Like, when I was there last, it was fine. But, like, I love that they're in a place where my mom can be like, it's disgusting. We can find better Jewish food elsewhere. You know, like, I love they have the choice.
Yes. Yes.
But finding whitefish in you're not from rural Pennsylvania per se,
no.
But
no, not Pennsylvania.
Not the big city though.
Yeah. So I'm surprised, but hey, listen, if you know what you like in your whitefish salad, you know what you like.
I know. I mean, first of all, I detest celery. So anytime there's any sort of salad of that nature.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Who would drink celery soda?
Oh my God.
Dr. Brown's?
My
dad.
Does he really?
Yes.
I love Dr. Brown's, but I can't believe anybody would want to drink their celery soda.
I believe my dad drinks it. I believe my mom goes for the black cherry.
Yes, that's what I go for, diet black cherry.
Celery soda. It sounds so, like, who thought to do that? That's
and for some reason they call it, it's celery flavored, but they call it celery. I can't imagine drinking that.
Drag queen name, celery.
By the way, this officially, for any of the listeners listening, this conversation officially counts as your bar bat mitzvah. So
I will take it. Yes, that's right. It's my Haftorah portion, talking about white fish salad with or without celery.
Wait, okay. Oh, sorry. So I already had this conversation in my head, and we, for whatever reason in my head, we were talking about your singing voice. That's why when you said the Haftorah portion, it popped back into my head where I was just like, that's how I first fell in love with you, Elliot.
Wow.
Was through your voice.
Yes, of course. Of course. A true siren song.
Hearing you sing a Billy Joel song. Billy Joel, who I fought against my entire life.
Oh, how dare
you. My parents love Billy Joel.
How dare you?
I've come around to, like, Moving On, parentheses, Anthony's song, in parentheses.
Or as we say on Long Island, Anthony's song.
Anthony.
Is it Moving On or Moving Out?
Moving Out.
Thank you for granting me that, everyone. And not
when you're from Long Island, you have to know every lyric to every song off of his greatest hit by the time you're 8. You have it's the law. And I knew, like, I remember very distinctly, I have such sense memory of it, of, like, doing my homework and, like, the smell of the number 2 pencil and just listening to the same song after song of his, and knowing it was like a competition to see how quickly you could figure out, you could learn every word to We Didn't Start the Fire, you know, as kids. But it's just rote. It's in my head. And then I think to make only as if it wasn't already, like, you know, I wasn't biased enough. We went to go see him at Madison Square Garden when we were kids. And it was me and my family, my parents and Alana, my sister. And we went and we got, like, you know, okay seats, I guess. I don't know. They were, you know, obviously they were up a few levels. And at the beginning of the show, of course, we got there early and somebody came up to us and was like, are you guys a family of 4? And we were like, yes, we are. And they were like, well, we're with Billy and he reserves seats for some families in the front. And we were taken out to the front row.
That's Glazer energy. That is the fucking Glazers. That's some Glazer shit. That is Glazer shit.
Isn't that nice?
Wild.
How could you not love that man? He reserves seats for families in the front. Like, what?
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it was wild.
How early are we talking to get there to, like, meet the people? you see what I'm saying? Like, if it was like an 8 o'clock concert, were you guys there at 7?
I don't think we were that wildly early, but I remember we drove in from, you know, from Long Island and must have been there. I mean, we must have been there, I don't know, a good half hour early.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering when they do that kind of thing, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a once in a lifetime thing for sure, but God, it was amazing.
That's so cool.
Do you think, all right, two questions. One, nowadays, do you think he still does that? Because now people probably put that out there on like Reddit. On the Billy Joel subreddit, they're like, if you're a family of four, you get there early. You
know? I would imagine it's on a Reddit too, and I wouldn't know for sure, but I would like to think that Billy still does that.
I would think he still does it too.
Number two, why? What energy?
Because he's a good Long Island. I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's just such a. It's just that's who he is. I'm also impressed by it because he never seems to pander. I've never found him to pander in the ways some musicians might. And I think that's what makes it so much more surprising is that if he does it out of the goodness of his heart, he's not even doing it for the likes, you know, he's not doing it for the attention. He's doing it because it's just something he likes to do, which is, you know, in this point in time, wildly, you know, astonishing to imagine somebody doing a kind act like that and not wanting attention for it.
Right. He's a mensch.
He's a mensch.
But he's menching out.
Yes,
he is. But like, it's like we found out the Little Caesars CEO was paying Rosa Parks's rent. Is that true?
He paid her bills. He paid Rosa Parks's bills in Detroit for like most of her life.
Wow.
The founder of Little Caesars. I know.
That's like, and like finding out that like, I think Usher was paying for some like people's college.
Really?
Yeah. College fees. And I think, it was Nelly. Nelly was doing that. Which somehow made him even hotter. As if he wasn't already like the hottest guy. And then he got like swole. And, and then you find out he's quietly paying for college for people. It's like, oh my God, he's perfect.
Yes, yes. I mean, but my thing is like with Billy Joel though, because you were like, what kind of energy would he get? I would imagine, well, first of all, if I was the person, first you have to ask, are you a family of four? And then you have to ask the children, do you like Billy Joel?
Of course.
And because if they do, then the energy you're getting is like, kids who are like enjoying your music, like it makes you probably feel good. You're like, yes, I'm doing it for the children.
Totally.
I'm doing it for the culture. So
totally.
Like, it feels like, give me like kids in the front who are going to sing along and like clap and dance, as opposed to industry people who probably you normally get those front row tickets.
Yeah. And sometimes I think like when he looks out at a crowd, like because I guess when you're from Long Island and you're a Billy Joel fan, which is just like, you know, it's like the membership. when that's the case, I wonder if like Billy looks out and sees rowdy Long Islanders with like swilling beer and screaming. But like, I feel like nobody at his show, part of me feels like if somebody said like a homophobic slur, Billy would get mad. Like, I feel like he would tisk anybody who, despite his like affection for like blue collar Long Islandy people, he still would tisk you if you used slurs or if you were unkind in some way. Like, there's just something about him, some energy that I find so appealing. I just find him so appealing.
Yeah, they have called him the Fugazi of Long Island.
Oh, yes.
What?
They used to, Ian MacKaye from Fugazi, they would stop if someone was doing something like misogynistic or like if someone was being rough with a woman like in the pit or something like that or saying something homophobic or racist or whatever, they would stop the concert, call that person out.
Foo Fighters. I've heard Foo Fighters has done that too. Dave Grohl will do that too. I love that. I love that.
That's the power. That's the power. That's using your power for good.
And I love that.
Very much like, get out of here.
Get out of here.
I love that. Yeah. Like, oh my God. Like the ability, because like, I often say this too. It's like, when comedians who are kind of like, you know, these sort of like guys who have maybe reinvented themselves as alt-right or sort of the kind of people where I'm like, even if you think you're okay, don't you kind of look at your audience and go, what hath I wrought?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And like, you kind of look within, and I've always felt like just, sometimes I look at my audience, sometimes I get nervous with like, if my audience is all white, I go, uh-oh, what am I saying?
Right.
But I'm like, but you like kind of think about like what you're putting out into the universe. And it's like, if you had the choice, and like, I mean, not obviously just like for someone to be white, of course, because some of my best lovers have been white. I mean, it's like for people to be like assholes. If I was like, ew, you came to see me? No,
correct.
Could you leave? That makes me feel bad. It makes me feel bad that you came to see me.
I distinctly remember doing haunting renditions at Littlefield in Brooklyn, and these two people came to see the show and sat like in the front row. And one of the guests was Marnie the dog from Instagram, who was Instagram famous. And she I became friends with her owner, and she was the one who tilted her head and had like her tongue sticking out.
Yeah.
She was, she looked rather unwell in real life, but she photographed well. But all that to say that they came basically to see Marnie and were like freaking out when she was on the stage with me, and they were like taking pictures and being loud, like the whole time they were being loud. And then when Marnie left, they like very loudly and drunkenly like got up to leave. And I was, and people were yelling at them because they were being assholes. But I was like, why would you come here? Like, how did you connect with me, even if it were for the dog? Like, like you said, what have I wrought?
Yes. If you look out in your audience and you see just a sea of like Ron Watkins.
Yes.
Right. You know, you've done something wrong.
Right. What is the energy I'm putting into the universe?
Exactly.
That would attract that kind of negativity.
It's scary.
It is. But at least they left. Thank God. So also, it's like so funny to me because they are fans of this dog. I don't understand, though, like. There are obviously viral animals. I follow a lot of animals on Instagram, so I'm not above that. But I don't think I would go to like a live event to see an animal.
Well, neither did I. I mean, I bet on it. I was like, maybe this will be a fun, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I bet on it as being like a fun thing. I didn't, it wasn't like come, you know, the show that I do is like a weird show with music and stand up. It's like a really weird variety alt cabaret show. So I don't expect, I wouldn't expect anybody to be like, it's going to be all about Marnie for an hour. I don't, you know, I know people are know better than that. So it was very jarring for them to be A, rude, but B, rude about seeing a dog from social media. Like, you'd think those would be like the kindest people, the gentlest people, the most polite people. They'd go out of the, if they were going to leave early, they'd be doing so politely and quietly rather than loudly and drunkenly.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Oh, please excuse me. Please.
Exactly. I just came to see the canine. Something tender. Right. I know. I fully agree with you. I'm like, what are you doing? But
and may she rest in peace. We lost Marnie, I think a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
Her mom was so sweet. Is so sweet. Such a sweet gal. And Marnie was such a little dear dog and just so, I mean, truly, like, you know, what was sweet about Marnie was that in real life, she had a vestibular disease, which is what my dog ended up getting, which is like, it's like vertigo for a dog that ends up leaving them with their head tilted slightly.
Oh.
And so she had that. And then Atticus ended up having that. But it just, I hate using these words, but it worked on Instagram. So.
The tilt, right. Really a way to make your disease work for you.
It
that is the influencer culture. Can you make your vertigo work for you? Because that dog had like branding. That dog had sponsorship. So
she did. No, I mean her mom literally, like when I met her, she's like, I don't have to work anymore. Managing Marnie is my full time
job. Mabel, what are you doing for us? What are you doing for us? Mabel's a money pit as far as we're concerned right now.
Of course.
Not bringing in any Boku bucks.
I know. Well, she like also refuses to be your pawn. She's gorgeous, but very bossy. So like if you try to pick her up and do a picture, she will automatically look like you've kidnapped her because she doesn't want to be your boss. You know what I mean? She doesn't want to be involved. And I'm like, you're gorgeous. We need to make that paper.
Yeah, she is beautiful.
She will not allow it.
Wait, Elliot. We're going to answer some people's relationship questions.
Yeah, great.
So to do that, we have to know where you're coming from.
Yeah, how do you get emotionally, physically?
We're going to start at the beginning. We're going to go through your entire relationship history.
Well, have you done any dating in the pandemic?
Well, I was in a relationship that started at the beginning of the pandemic. And then, before it, and then so it was nice because I had a partner during all of COVID, which I never took for granted, but it was just really lovely. And then in November, actually on the day Biden won, that boyfriend broke up with me over the phone, and very abruptly and unkindly. So I'm still coming out of the emotional whiplash of that. Truly, 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 like near sociopathic behavior.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Was there any indication that this dude was a sociopath before that phone call?
Not one iota, not one iota, which is what made it even scarier and creepier and I think more, you know, look, it would have, maybe it would have been mildly less jarring if he had shown some sort of crazy tendency beforehand, or certainly if he had said, we need to talk, rather than this is over out of nowhere.
Oh, shit.
So that's what the conversation was. It wasn't a, hey,
the conversation was, what time should I pick you up? And the response was, I think we need to break up.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. I love my therapist so much. I have my medications. And I love this book that I basically carried around for, I carried it around like a Baba blanket, like a whatever, a Baba.
Yeah.
This book called The Wisdom of a Broken Heart by Susan Piver. This book saved my life. And it is everything anybody needs. I say it's like, it's just so helpful. She's just this like cool Jewish Buddhist lady who's just like very aware of how annoying self-help stuff is. She does not like self-help. And she's, I don't know how to describe it. It's not clinical. It's not medical. It's just reasonable. And she's just smart. She's just a smart, cool lady. And that book was, because I think the day after, 2 days after the breakup, I went to a bookstore and was like, just like a weepy mess looking for anything I could find on those bookshelves.
What was it about the book that like helped you, like that pulled you out of that?
She's just really, really good at helping people find, at helping you find perspective and also acknowledging how much it fucking sucks. She's so good at being like, you have to acknowledge that this fucking blows and you can't, she's not a fan of you like talking your way out of it or using like false confidence to acquire real confidence, you know, like speaking as if, you know.
Yeah,
she's just more of a realist. And I don't know. It's just her perspective is so reasonable all across the board. It's just wildly reasonable. She's also a big meditation fan. And so she teaches you how to meditate in her book. And like her practice ever since writing just the books is that she does like teach meditation online. She's just a cool lady. I don't know how else to describe it. She's just like a cool lady who's very normal, who just has a great perspective on breakups, relationships too, but also breakups and like how to actually deal with it in a way where it's like, this blows, but she's going to work through it with you without pandering and never feeling, it's never patronizing. It's never childish. It's never,
right. She's never being like, don't call it a breakup. It's a breakthrough.
Never.
And
none of that.
Be your fresh self.
Nothing.
Like that.
None of that.
Of
she hates that shit. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. And so obviously you get this phone call and you're like, what? I assume the conversation was like, I assume you were stunned in this conversation.
Stunned.
So like,
by the way, Biden had just won, just so you know.
So the first
that Saturday, this is the Saturday of the, like, where they had the Four Seasons lawn repair, whatever that is.
Correct. Correct. So if I didn't have a reason to be like in tears already, it was like, the high low of it all. Also, I mean, I could say it now, but that was the day I also found out my sister was pregnant with my first niece or nephew, you know, like such a crazy day.
Right. Well, started out great. And then really this person just pulled the fucking rug out from under you. Did you have to like exchange like belongings? Have you had to see this person or is it like very much like cut it off, done and done?
Well, everything was left at my house, everything. Uh-huh. He was really evasive, quite honestly, really evasive. And we didn't end up seeing each other again after barely talking for like 6 weeks because he was too afraid. He was just like afraid across the board. And
because he knows what he did was dirty. He knows it was trash and he didn't want to have to hear your response.
Correct. And then when he did finally six weeks later, I was like, he tried to insist that he was doing it for me to like to prevent me from having to deal with like hardship. And I was like,
what?
Bitch, you're doing this for you. Right. Like, all of this is for you. You are cowardly and juvenile. And by the way, when you know, I've had enough time to think about it enough, but it's like, when you think about the idea of somebody ending a relationship over a text, the person that you actually think of is literally 10 years old. Who would literally, or over a phone or a text?
Yeah.
That's what a child who's never, like, they've never done anything, and they're in a relationship, and they're like, I need to break up with my boyfriend or my girlfriend. I'm going to text them, you know, or I'm going to do it on the phone. It's like, it's so juvenile that I can't believe that an adult man could do that so easily. And a friend of mine even too was like, put again, all of this being like put into perspective, she was like telling a friend when we were together, she was like, yeah, they were together all of COVID. And then, you know, he has like roommates and shit. And he just left Elliot in the dark alone in COVID. And I was like, oh my God, he did. Like, I didn't even say that, you know, I'm like, how do you do that to somebody? It's crazy, crazy. Yeah.
And go on.
No, the cherry on top of all of this, or I guess like the bruised rotten cherry on top of all of this shit Sunday, was that this happened to me like 7 years ago when I had a very similar breakup that my boyfriend knew was like deeply traumatic, and he did the exact same thing.
So he knew that someone had like broken up over the phone.
Broke up with me, like we lived together, and just one day it was like, we need to end this. There's no talking. There's no negotiation. I'm too immature to actually engage that conversation. So I'm going to be cruel instead. Happened to me 7 years ago. I think you remember my ex from that. And he did the same thing. I'm like, you knew that was like the worst thing that happened to me romantically.
Right.
Ever. And you did the same thing. It's crazy.
And he did the same thing for you. That makes it even crazier that he said he did it for him, because if he knows that kind of thing like literally upended you, for him to then be like, well, I was trying to help do you a favor,
it's scary.
Andy, his mouth is agape.
Mouth is agape.
He's doing the thing where he touches his forehead because he just can't fathom what's happening.
My hands are I try to pay attention to this stuff because I'm writing a character that's like me now and a thing, and I try to figure out ways to show, like, there's a lot of like touching
a lot of squeezing the bridge of the nose.
Nose. I'm like, oh yes, okay, that's. But it's like it's just tough for me to fathom this behavior.
I know.
So many, like, it really, it's funny how a lot of like therapy and self-help, which I think we all probably agree is
annoying at best.
Murky at best. Is all really just about saying like, oh, you just have to be honest with people. Like, and how many people can't, not even a fucking molecule of honesty, how they can't, like, and in order, and then the weird evasions in order to
avoid
around being honest with someone.
Yeah.
Well, or you can also imagine who in this past relationship was the one who was in therapy and encouraging the other one to go to therapy, and which one was not.
Yes.
Oh,
I think here's another rule. Andy's second rule. First rule, if we haven't broken bread, please don't stop me on the street.
Yep.
Number two.
Yep.
If someone is urging you to go into therapy, go into therapy.
Go. Right. Go.
At least try it. I say at least do at three sessions. Three sessions?
Five. And urging,
but I'm saying, depending on the therapist, you want to see if you match that person.
But also urging lovingly, not urging and saying you're crazy. By no means. Urging lovingly and saying like, you will benefit from this, and I believe everyone benefits from therapy, and I believe it should be governmentally instituted that everyone go to therapy, especially before you have children, you know, or whatever. Like, it's me being like, you should get a warm winter jacket for the snow. That's all it is. It's not an insult.
Yeah.
And, you know, pleading with somebody to do it at a certain point, you know, it becomes moot, but I think it's an act of kindness and warmth and gentleness and love that you want somebody to feel better internally, you know, live with themselves better.
It's true. I mean, I think the thing about this situation, and I think this is the thing for me that was always the hardest in breakups or rejections, or anytime someone does something in like a shitty way, What I hate the most and what you have to let go of almost the quickest is, like, I want there to be fucking cosmic retribution. Oh. Like, I want this person to never know peace. Yes. I want him to never find love again.
Correct.
Like, I want to feel as though you can't just do that to people and go about your merry way.
Correct.
But you know what, honey? We cannot. We cannot control it. We can't see the future. We're not going to follow this man for years and wait to see, well, if he gets a comeuppance.
Well, to quote Susan Piver, or to paraphrase Susan Piver, she says somewhere in the book that, you know, a breakup is like a death. And also, somebody on stage, I forget which comedian it was. It was a female comedian. I can't remember who it was. But I loved the line where she was like, a breakup is basically like, oh, my friend died. My best friend died. I forget who says it. And maybe they listen to the podcast because I'd love to know who it is. Maybe Beth Stelling, but I'm not positive.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of that being said, Susan Piver says, paraphrases by saying, like, a best friend is, or a breakup is like, is almost like a death, but it's almost worse because, you know, like, this person is still out there kind of like a ghost, and it's creepy because you don't really get the closure because you know they're always living in the world somewhere out there, and it's just, but it, obviously over time the thought of them or the attachment to them, you know, dissipates. Mm-hmm. But at least at first it's just bizarre that they're out there, that they're existing, and that you don't get to see them face that karmic retribution.
Like, I want him to not know peace, but at the same time, it's like part of someone being shitty is that, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to go to therapy probably. He's going to find someone basic and dumb to be basic and dumb with him, and yes, it'll be fine, right? And, like, that's kind of it. Like, part of when you're shitty, it's almost like you can't be punished because your shittiness kind of prevents you from either realizing you did something bad or having high enough standards that you would be.
Yeah, and if you're not willing to do the work to know that the basic tenets of kindness are at least in the form of a breakup, you say to somebody, you start with we need to talk rather than this is over, you know?
Yeah.
If somebody can't do that, then I don't know what hope they have evolving. I don't know what hope they have for acquiring the basic necessities of, like, mature adult behavior. Because I would never have suspected he could act like that. I never would have suspected that. And so it's just like, if he did that to me, I don't know who would get through to him enough to make him evolve otherwise. I can't imagine, because it just doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
This is over. You don't even end cartoons. Like, there are more elegant ways for, like, Looney Tunes is like, that's all fun. Like, it's a fun little, like, you don't even, this is over is one of the coldest fucking
crazy
sentences.
Especially so when, mean, as far as it seems, you had plans to meet up that day.
Right.
Which is, should I pick you up?
Literally, I had planned a beautiful, like, day trip to this. I had planned, like, such a cool day. And he was, and I remember even saying, like, why would you, or later at some point, why would you do that? And he's like, because I didn't want to do it in the car. And I was like, do it in the car? You would, like, the thing you should have done is cancel and say we need to talk. You don't, like, break. Insane. All of it is insane. It's all insane.
Which would you guys rather, that the whoever in your life has done you dirty, never learns the lesson, and then lives a terrible life, or would you rather they learn their lesson, become a better person?
That's, I can't have them learn the lesson and live a terrible life. I can't mix and match.
I honestly am so torn because you're right. It's like, I wouldn't want to wish ill will on somebody, but what he did to me was so pointedly cruel that it's hard for me to be like, well, I guess I hope he ends up, you know, whatever, evolved and stuff, but not unless I beat him to it.
I'd rather him have a terrible life and not know. Because here's my thing about it, too.
That's the girl I love.
I don't appreciate your evolution coming at the expense of my
happiness. Right. Correct.
And that's what I don't appreciate. So you get to walk around here living your best life.
Correct.
And I had to rebuild my ass like Hurricane Katrina came through.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly right.
That's the Gwen Stacy principle, right? To get at Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy.
Get out of here.
You didn't hurt. You didn't kill Spider-Man. You killed a friend of his, and that hurts him.
I see. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I just feel
you're the Gwen Stacy. Your feelings are the Gwen Stacy.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how dare you?
Yeah, I'm the sacrificial lamb here. Like, fuck you.
Get out of here. Okay, on that, fuck you. We're gonna take a quick break and come back with Elliot Glazer to answer your relationship cue.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, y'all. Let me talk to you for a minute about underwear. Yes, that's what I want to talk about. Now, I don't know about you, but my underwear drawer is the Wild West. I've got 12 different brands, 4 different fits. Half of it ain't comfortable. I don't even know where I got most of them. I open my underwear drawer in the morning and I'm like, what do we have here? And these are items I purchased for myself. How did I let it get so bad? How? Well, I'm telling you right now, I am getting myself together with the help of MeUndies. Now that I felt the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies, they're all I'm reaching for in the underwear drawer. I got the cheeky briefs. This is the ones I bought. The cheeky briefs in a fun tartan plaid print. And I'm addicted. I'm addicted. They're made from sustainably sourced beechwood fiber and have a flexible, no-roll waistband that keeps them in place all day long. Thank you. Comfort and fashion. There are so many undies to choose from all black classics to fun, expressive prints. MeUndies has a look for everyone, and they come in sizes ranging from extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for every body. Thank you, MeUndies, for the range. MeUndies signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug. It's breathable. It's stretchy. It's ideal for all day wear. And if you're listening to this right now and you're saying, okay, Naomi, I have enough underwear. Well, guess what? MeUndies isn't just about underwear. Explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and more. And they even have an activewear collection called Move Me, which is the softest activewear on the market. So get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. Hey, y'all. Wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us mostly spilling the tea and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals, and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, yeah, which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show.
Back.
We're here with Elliot Glazer, who has just—he has been through something. He is rebuilt. Ooh. We are watching a phoenix rising from the ashes, and this is exactly who I want to be answering relationship questions with us. Someone who has been in the darkness. Look the devil in the face.
Darkness.
When do you think you were over this dude?
Over?
Yeah, when did you get free? Like, so it happened in November. When did you feel like you were like, I'm done, I'm free, I'm on the other side?
Not quite yet.
Okay, good to know.
Definitely not yet. This is the longest I feel like I've sort of mourned anything, but also knowing too that like it's not, and you know, again, Miss Susan Piver talks about it. She's like, you're not missing the person per se, you're missing the relationship, missing the companionship, you're missing the friend, you know, the friendship, ultimately the friendship. And everything that comes with it, at least in her words, is like, you know, the perks. But what this thing that you miss so much, is, you know, is so often after a breakup, is the relationship, the dynamic that became your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. Even if you weren't together all the time, even if it was a long distance relationship, your body and heart and mind learns the patterns of this. Your life is in a different mode. You know, when that ends, especially abruptly, it's like, it's not so much being over him. It's like, I'm not over it. I'm not over that mode of life and feeling like there's somebody always on the other line, you know?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think the pandemic probably isn't helping. It's like, I think once we get back into the world, it might be easier to let some of it go.
Correct. Correct.
When we can kind of do stuff again. Cause
The silence and the sort of solitude of it all makes it harder. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky that, you know, a lot, my sister was here in LA for a few months for work. So that was perfect timing. Cause I needed to have her here for that. And also, you know, at first I was like waffling about getting another dog because I was like, I don't want to rely on a dog or project my emotions on a dog. Then I did it and it's perfect. He's perfect. He's a wonderful, wonderful companion.
Yes.
So we get questions from Twitter DMs, Instagram DMs, voicemails, and also Gmail, which is where this one comes from. Anonymous.
Ooh, I love an anon.
And I'm going to show you both this. They bribed us with a picture of their dog.
I love that.
Oh,
that is how you get read. Oh, look at it sleeping.
Yes. All right. And I'll post that picture on our
Did
Instagram.
Did they say you could?
Well, it's now mine. I own the life rights. You send us a picture of the dog, I own the life rights.
So yes,
I can write my own Homeward Bound about this dog if I want. So. Anonymous writes, my partner / fiance / whatever you call it, except husband, and I have been together for almost 9 years. Since March, I have been working from home, and he has been home both since March last year, both working and not working since April or May. He just got a new job that is on site and is gone all evening into the night. As much as I am bummed for him having to venture out into COVID world, I am thrilled to have time to just myself and the dog. I am concerned that since he likes to have more together time than I do, that my bliss may become an issue. We had heated discussions, plural, regarding my independence and wanting to be by myself, quote unquote, too much before. How can I handle this newfound bliss without hurting his feelings?
I mean, this isn't really a problem.
What did you say? This is what?
I said this isn't really a problem.
I don't think it's a problem.
I mean, like, you're saying, like, how can you enjoy... First, I mean, when he's gone, if you're happy when he's gone, he doesn't know just how happy you are. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you handle it? When he comes home, you just don't go, whoo, I lived it up when you were gone.
Or fuck.
when he
steps in the house, don't be like, ah, fuck.
First of all, it's like, okay, so she or he, whoever wrote the letter, is more independent and likes their independence, and her and the partner is more codependent. So I think you just probably have to negotiate. Like Andy said, it's like, just be honest. Obviously it's easier said than done, but if they're just honest with each other, they could probably just like negotiate how to do that in a way where they're both happy, whether that means, you know, she has more alone time or they find some sort of compromise. I don't think it's like a problem that by any means would, you know, be very major outside of just figuring it out together, like what works best for them.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think there's maybe a deeper thing. I want to get y'all's perspective.
Ooh, I love it. Get there.
It's just, there are differing levels of being introverted and extroverted in this relationship. Now, Naomi, you and I, we happen to both be pretty introverted,
yeah,
with a sprinkling of wanting to be around other people and each other, right?
Right.
And I think, I don't think it's too, I think there are times when I want to be more social than you.
Of course.
I think I would say probably 3 out of 5 of those times, you end up enjoying whatever social thing we're at.
Uh-huh.
Or do. I'm just putting that out there so that 3 out of 5 times. But I'm saying I think we are fairly in within levels. But no, what are you going to say?
But see, this is what I would say, though, because I think the big thing is, like, for instance, just this past weekend when you were like, oh, you want to get together with so-and-so? And I wasn't in the mood, but I was like, why don't you do it? I'm constantly pushing you, I think, especially more in the move to LA, because in New York, I don't think we had to deal with it. But constantly being like, I don't want to go, but go. Go, go.
I love that.
I want you to, like, have your people who are not me, who don't know me, who don't, like, you know, you need to build up your friendships, like, for yourself, just, like, you know, emotionally or whatever. And it gives us time to be apart.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
It was real. Because even before COVID, I mean, certainly COVID is intense, but even before, you know, unless I was in a writer's room, we were both in the house.
Yeah.
So we're always, like, here together. And I think it's so good for both of us to, like, get out and, like, what do we say? Gotta miss a bitch. Go lead a house. Tell us. Get a story. Bring something to the dinner table.
Yes. I love that. And I love when partners can be independent of each other. I love that.
I know. It's very crucial. That was, like, always for me the goal, too, of a relationship. Yes. To be like, we're together, but we don't have to, like, do everything together.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But there are certain times maybe that, like, you're like, but I want you to be, like, you like, okay, I always say this, though, and I could be totally wrong. You know, Andy's parents have been together for, like, 50 years. Mm. And, like, they have a very, you know, they are a unit, and they interact as a unit, and they have their people. So that's what he grew up seeing, whereas I grew up with, like, a single mom, and, like, I think I'm just more wired to, like, do my own thing.
Yeah, for sure. And you grew up in different places, too.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, like, you just don't, you know, whereas, like, you are more like, we're a couple. We should go do this.
Yeah. There are certain things that, look, I'm a weird dude. We all know that, right? And there are certain times where I get to be on the same page as everyone else. And one of those times is when there are expectations that the couple will show up, right? And that when that happens, I'm like, oh, I'm doing something everyone else is doing.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. And I think in that scenario, when you are a couple invited to a thing, whatever, you show up as a couple, I've always felt like in that scenario, if I show up with a boyfriend, it's like I'm like the king of, you know, I feel like I'm like the center of attention, because yes, everyone, I have a boyfriend. It's so childish, it's so juvenile, but I love that. I feel like I'm like lucky if I have that, you know. Otherwise it's like, no, I'm stag or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I get both sides of it. But I really appreciate the idea of being independent, but also having the option to be like, for Andy to be like, Naomi, please come with me to this. And, you know, Naomi being like, okay. And then you go and it's like, look, they're a couple, you know, but.
Yeah. And like, then I go and then you can't tear me away. And then Andy's the one who's like, can we please go home? And I'm like, no, yeah. You brought me here and now I live here.
That's right.
I don't leave parties. Once I go, I inevitably find one person to talk to for 2 hours.
And that's fair.
Elliot, have you ever been in a relationship with someone where you had differing levels of extrovertedness, introvertedness?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I dated a guy who was like a little bit more extroverted and like much more eager to like go out and do gay stuff with his friends who were like, I called them like professional gays. Like, they're like, oh, we go to these bars and these parties and these restaurants and stuff. And I was like, I'm a mess, you know? Yeah. And so I love that I could, in those moments, I'd be like, go ahead. Like, right. You go to that bar that I would never want to go to in my life and go enjoy yourself. And I'm going to watch the Golden Girls and that's fine.
Right.
And I love that. I love that negotiation.
I think it's also for this person, it's about how you sort of frame it too, this idea of not being hurtful. Because for instance, what if I've been saying for so long in COVID, I can't wait until you and I take separate vacations. and I was like, drop me off at a place in Palm Springs. I will see you in 3 days.
That's great.
But the way I phrase it, or hopefully I'm phrasing it, like, it's not like, I can't stand you. It's more like, I need to be by myself or I'm going to explode.
Yes.
So the way you kind of phrase it, where it's like, ooh, if I see your fucking face one more time, that's bad. That's hurtful. Well, that's how you end a relationship.
Sure. Yeah, my friend actually, he and his husband, they lived together in Brooklyn, and I think COVID was making them go stir crazy, and like they were on top of each other. And he came out to LA for a few months knowing his husband would like come out intermittently. Mm-hmm. And I was just, and I'm just sort of like impressed by that and encouraged by it. And like, I don't know. I mean, my parents are pretty codependent and they love being together, you know, they love being together. It's almost like Alon and I are cursed by their, you know, their union. But at the same time, my dad like went back to New York for some family stuff for a couple weeks. And my mom's like, I'm good. And I'm like, so happy. I'm so happy that she's like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. I'm not codependent. And I'm like, well, I stand corrected, you know? Great.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll say this. Naomi wanting two separate vacations, I understand on an intellectual level and on an emotional level. I'm like, you don't want to go on a vacation with me, even though we haven't left each other's sight in over a year? Like, emotionally.
I'm with you. I get both.
Difficult. Even though intellectually, I'm like, yeah, of course. Obviously. I understand.
I get both. I get both. And I would honestly probably err towards Andy and be like, but what about me, you know? But I completely understand and appreciate the need for space. I get it.
Yeah.
So the core of this is having a honest conversation, right?
Yeah. Just making sure when you talk about it, you're not saying like, it's not, you know, you like to be by yourself. It's not that you like have a problem with him.
Correct. And you're finding that compromise.
Exactly. And I think, you know, kind of framing it in that way will be like less insulting to his delicate sensibilities.
Correct.
All right. Now, I mentioned before, we get voicemails.
Oh.
Naomi, what is that phone number?
Okay, let me see if I remember. 323-524-7839.
God damn, girl.
I got it. I only know three phone numbers by heart.
All right, so I'm going to play one of them right now.
Hi, my name is Alice. I'm 27. Let's see. DFAB, non-binary. I live in L.A. I've never had sex before, but I've been thinking during the pandemic that once the pandemic is over, I would love to like download Tinder and just like go to town. So I was wondering if there's like any advice you would have. I know famously sex negative and then sex neutral, but just like any advice for someone who's having sex for the first time later in life that maybe you wish someone would have given you when you first started, or just like anything of that nature. But yeah, thank you. Bye. Love the show.
So Elliot, I'm sex negative and Andy is sex neutral, by the way. That's
what does
what
that mean?
Referring to. You know, these young people are so sex positive and I'm sex negative. Don't really need it. Don't want to deal with it. We got to relax. Okay. It's fine. It's fine. And Andy's neutral.
Yeah.
He's like, right. I'll allow
take
it.
Take or leave it.
Sure.
Take or leave it. But I will say, you know, when someone's like, I'm 27, going to have sex for the first time, I'm like, exciting. That's fun.
I think it's great.
That's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Question of like, first, also too, I think it's so funny because you're like, I'm thinking of downloading Tinder and going to town. I'm like, you and everybody else, honey.
Yes.
This pandemic is over.
Yeah. It is fuck summer.
It is fuck summer.
Fuck summer. That's hilarious.
It's like, I was like, so don't worry. It'll happen for you.
Oh, yeah. This is going to make the Summer of Love look like a fucking Victorian chastity party.
Yes.
It's so nuts. But I guess it would be like, I guess my question is sort of like, what value do you place on sex emotionally? Meaning, like, do you want to be in a relationship with somebody before you do it? Or you just want to, like, do it and kind of lose your virginity so, like, you can kind of have lost it?
I think they should just. They said they're non-binary,
non-binary, right? Yeah.
Then I think they should just not take it too seriously. Personally, I think just get started. Just get started. You know, it's like, I don't know. I part of me feels like the sort of virginal archetype of like, you know, my first time and like, you know, it had to be perfect. And he put roses on the whatever, like all that shit. It's so heteronormative. It's so exhausting. And I don't think it's, I think it's silly. And I think it's like you said, you want to like start figuring out what it is and what it's like and what you are and what you like. And I think it doesn't have to be so precious.
That's interesting. See, and I think it doesn't have to be precious. I do think you're right. I think especially like being, I mean, even though of course that is how I treated it, you know, when I was young.
As did I. I did too.
But I guess it's more
me
like
too.
I guess I kind of feel like the thing is because the first time you have sex is like it's all this buildup, right? And what you think it is. But for the most part, like it is a little uncomfortable. It may not really be, you know, this thing where it's like, I just want to make sure it's somebody who is not going to just like have some quick sex. Do you know what I mean? Like somebody who you can be like, hey, this is my first time, so could you like slow it down a little
bit? Not like the jackhammer guy from Sex and the City.
The jackhammer guy from Sex and the City. Exactly.
No, I think you're right, Naomi. I think it should be somebody. It's not a matter of like rose petals on the bed preciousness, but it's like being with a partner who is kind and thoughtful and gentle and considerate and understands that what it means for you for to be your first time. I think that's what it requires.
Right. And also like what it means, like, and literally I'm like, again, it's not somebody you're like, I'm in love with you, you're the best, but just where you're like, hey, so I haven't really done this before. So if we could just kind of figure it out. And also like, cause I don't necessarily know what I want you to do or what I need you to do or what's, you know, cause we haven't done it yet.
Correct.
So, you know, let's just like do our thing. You just want someone who's gonna like do that, I guess.
Would it help to build up into it?
What do you mean?
Build up into the act. Like instead of it just being like finding someone who you do trust and you're like, all right, on this day we're gonna have sex. It's on the calendar.
Right.
All right. Instead of that, like, you know, a couple dates before that where you...
Oh, I see. Like having a little bit of time to get to know.
Yeah. Where like date one, you smooch.
Right. Well, of course, you've got to know what this person is.
Some hand stuff. Right? Do you see? And you build up into...
I mean, I think that's nice. I think that's lovely.
Date two hand stuff is lovely.
Also, you could find out, again, one of the things that... Because I think there's a lot of pressure that's put on, like, heteronormative P&V sex. There are 100,000 things you can do.
A true menu.
I was just going to say that too. It's so much weirder for when you're gay to expect that it's just that like you're supposed to do butt stuff immediately. You know, like not everybody's into that. It's taking from the heteronormative idea of P&V stuff and like applying it to being gay with just like dicks and holes. It's the same thing, and it's like, yeah, but not everything's the same, not everyone's the same, and it's not all a monolith, you know.
Right
That, and that's why I'm saying, like, instead of there maybe just being like, all right, well, this is what the like heteronormative
right
cultural
there has to be penetration
is. Yes.
There doesn't have to be penetration.
Maybe like explore the menu.
Right. And I mean, I'm also assuming that this caller has explored some parts of the menu.
Huh.
You know, but the question is, was it a Cheesecake Factory menu? You know what I'm saying? Were they really getting in there? You know, so that's
right. Or was it a Crown's Fried Chicken menu?
Exactly. Just one placard. Exactly. So that's a thing. But it's like, I do think your impulse caller is right. Like, you just feel like, I'm ready. I want to get out there.
Yeah, I say find the appropriate partner first. Whether that's somebody you want to date or not, it's a matter of finding the right person who will be respectful and considerate and understand what this is for you rather than just anything else.
And also, and I agree with you, also, so going into that, like, what should I do or any tips, being communicative in that way.
Yes.
Making sure that you know how to tell somebody, you know, your boundaries, your interests, you know, where you're at. That to me will be it's more challenging than actually having sex of any kind. It's more like kind of communicating well with the person and making sure.
Correct.
Do you guys think younger people, because I don't know about you, Elliot, but I grew up where like sex was terrifying. It was the AIDS epidemic scared the living shit out of me. And so, and also like in Pennsylvania, we had one talk. I had a class in fifth grade, the sex class for like one period. My parents had a talk with me and then that was it. So like talking about like until I was like, I don't know how many relationships in, could I like communicate in a expressive way. Mm-hmm. About sex. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, do you guys think younger people, it's easier for them? Or do you think that just the people that we see on the internet happen to be a little more vocal? And so we think that people younger than us are more communicative and more open.
I don't know, because I'm creeped out by like kids on TikTok doing like strip teases. I'm so creeped out by it, but
that makes sense.
That's like what TikTok is. It's like kids or like preteens or teenagers doing like sexy dances, and it creeps me out so much. And
you gotta change your TikTok settings. You got to, because I got some weird videos at first, and then something came on it, and like I would press hold it, and it says you can say I don't like this.
Sorry, I don't
get rid of these.
I don't actually use TikTok. What I mean is like the prevalence of the TikTok look, meaning like, I feel like sex appeal is such a prevalent tone that people take on TikTok with their sexy dancing and shit, that I assume that that's something that kids see and are exposed to young. And so my guess would have been that they are then, yes, more sexualized when they're younger and are more apt to talk. But I also think like parents our age are like aching to be cool. And so I do think that they go out of their way and will go out of their way to like familiarize their kids with this stuff, even if it is uncomfortable, rather than our parents, but especially our baby boomers' parents. Tough. That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I see what you're saying though, because you would, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm more inclined to believe that the people who are vocal about it on social media are not, they're not everyone. I think kids, you know, because we're all.
I hope
like,
not.
Like, you're still going to have, like, the kids who are nervous and shy and don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend or anyone until, you know, they graduate high school, you know, that kind of thing.
I think that is what's happening. I think that despite what we see, kids are, you know, more chaste than before. You know, even like teen pregnancy is way down, I believe, you know, from like when we were younger.
Oh, I thought you meant just this last year. And I'm like, that's because they don't go to school. yeah. Over time.
No, I think it's just, I think you're right. I think despite what we see on like social media or think that is prevalent, I think you're right. Like, I do think that there's still plenty of nervous, awkward kids who are just like, I'm going to wait, you know, or scared too. I think that makes sense.
Well, I wonder too, if that's what you were saying. Remember that TV show where you were like, oh, it's not for me.
Generation.
And I wonder if it's, because to me, part of what I thought was, to me, that age of just like, what's the word? A self-possessed teen doesn't feel right to me.
No, a teen who's like quippy to their, who's constantly quippy to adults makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think on one hand, obviously it is like fantasy and like a TV show where you're like, God, when I'm a teenager, I hope I'm that cool. You know, maybe you're watching it, but it's like.
Wasn't one of the creators a teenager?
Of that show?
Yes. Yeah. It's a father and his daughter.
Well, of course.
Yes.
That, I bet that girl is quippy to her dad. Do you know what I mean? Like, that child is quippy and is like, Dad, we've got to nail this pitch.
Correct.
We're going into HBO today, Dad.
Dad, you went off the deck. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Like, that's their dynamic. So you can see that, but it's like, obviously, us on the other side, where it's like, that was not the teenager I was. That's not the teenager. Like, when I see that, that teenager doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
Correct. It's like their chaotic energies are just too overbearing for me. I don't remember things like that. I mean, kids are gross. Teenagers are disgusting in my opinion. You know, hornballs, stinky hornballs with like the smell of, even like I can very clearly smell the pungent stink of like high school. I can still smell like feet. Kids are gross. They're just gross. And like, the idea of them like being these raging balls of hormones, you know, walking around like, I get how that comes out all demented and shit, but I don't think they have I think the idea of teenagers being like, you know, like you said, self-contained and like, I just find that so repulsive and I don't think it's true. I don't think it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I hope it's not true.
I mean, we hope. God. Yeah. It's like, I'm not saying we don't want you to hate yourselves, teens.
No, we don't need you
to be like trying to run the room. It's when a teen is trying to run the room, I can't.
Grosses me out.
Yes. Or if you're going to fire your dad, do it in person. Don't have your agent do it.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's like, Dad, did you get a call from CAA?
Wait, Elliot, what kind of teenager were you, Elliot? Where'd you grow up? Perchef? Around there?
Long Island. Smithtown.
Smithtown.
Okay.
Directly in the center of Long Island. I was a, closeted and like, Long Island is, at least then, was so homophobic and so, the sort of Guido bravado of it all was really exhausting and, you know, stifling. So I was definitely closeted and trying to evade anybody dialing in on my sexuality, but I could also pass as straight. So it wasn't so much a problem, but it was definitely a big fear. And I was, I deflected by being like goofy. So I was well liked, but I was like riddled with mental illness and, and anxiety and being closeted. And so it was sort of like I was pretty much like just hiding under an identity, so to speak, you know, still like expressive and fun and funny and stuff, but also like, you know, suffering.
Right. Mm. When did you find singing? When did you kind of realize you could sing and like it was like a safe place or it got you attention? Like, how old were you when that kind of started?
Well, I remember like on a whim at like day camp doing like auditioning for Fiddler on the Roof, of course, obviously.
We love it.
And like I was Muddle the Tailor, and my grandma, my like paternal grandma, like I mean, it's awful to say, but I think it got her wet. Like it was so Jewish. And like her grandson being like singing in his like soprano voice as like all the Jewiness of it, I think made her like fly out of that auditorium, you know? getting that attention as a kid was, you know, really exciting. And then basically by the time I was in like high school and stuff, I was getting, you know, doing like theater and music and stuff. And then I got a scholarship to NYU for vocal performance
They never give money. I didn't know you got a scholarship.
I know.
NYU
I never would have been able to
money.
Go if I didn't have it. Yeah. But I very quickly pissed off my advisor by being like, I don't want to be an opera singer. She was horrified.
Really?
Horrified. Yeah. Yeah.
But you kept they let you keep the scholarship. Like, you still finished the major.
No.
Oh.
I switched majors in the same school and they let me keep the scholarship money.
So what was what'd you switch to?
Well, I switched to communications, which was like just interesting critical theory stuff that I actually really liked. And then I ended up switching to Gallatin, which was the school for, they call it individualized study, but I call it nonsense.
Yes. I almost went there for grad school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's cool. They let you like cherry pick from across all of NYU. And so my whole thing was like, or my parents like to say that I majored in the Golden Girls because I basically had like 5 term papers throughout my entire college career, all of which were about the Golden Girls at some point. My parents were like, really? This is what we're paying for you to write another paper about Bea Arthur?
So one on Rose. One on Blanche, one on each of them, and then the fifth one is on all 4. Like it's like the Defenders.
The fifth is on Golden Palace, actually.
Don Cheadle. The race issues involved in Don Cheadle and the Golden Palace.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I almost went there, except they like I got in and I went and visited and I loved it. I was like, oh my God, I could be in New York. And then they're like, by the way, we don't give out any scholarships for grad school. And I was like, oh. And then my dad, I have a talk with my dad, and they're like, well, how much do you want to go into debt to do? I was, by the way, it was going to be philosophy of experimental literature.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So they're like, "You, how much do you want to like go into debt for that?" And I was like, right. Not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah, not
zero.
At all. Yeah, yeah, zero. So yeah, so I had to wait for someone to give me a fellowship. Thank you, Temple.
Temple was actually another school I wanted to go to, because I just wanted to be in a city in New York. Yeah. Or, but it was hard to find, I don't know, public schools in the bigger cities. And mm-hmm. But Temple was cool, and there's like University of the Arts in Philly, which I was interested in too. But yeah, I ended up getting to go to NYU, and I truly was like repulsed by the I think Bowen Yang calls it daycare for the children of celebrities.
That feels right.
And it's
that
like, it's a perfect description. And I so easily was like repulsed by the rich kid shenanigans and antics, you know?
Yeah.
Just, it's really repulsive, but I got to meet some, basically my acapella group was my big takeaway. And that's where but that is truly where I was like, oh, this is where I want to sing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do it in here where like we take music and, you know, the acapella group was great, but I had to go in there and really change up that libretto or whatever, the repertoire.
Did you? It
was,
did you?
So bad. Yeah, I was like, guys, listen, no more black and flair. You know, I hate that look. Like
all black, but in like a pop of color.
Black with a flair. I was like, no, we're wearing jeans, you know? and then the music was, you know, the repartee was all right, but I was like, it's got to be like richer and like, I brought in some R&B, you know, I brought in some like weird, like even like Daft Punk or Basement Jacks and Maxwell. Like I was like insistent on bringing in some richer songs because I just couldn't listen to like, God bless them, but like the Steve Miller Band. I couldn't listen to that.
In my mind, it was a Weezer song. That's even worse.
No. Weezer would have been a step up. I just like, there was too much, like too much of the choices were on the money for an acapella group. And I was like, no, we have to inject some weirdness into this place. And we did. And everybody was so eager to do so. And I just fell in love with everybody in that group.
That's so funny.
And Mike, who was the musical director, is who created Haunting Renditions with me and arranged all the songs.
Oh, he plays the piano.
That's right.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So that it's all so full fun. Circle.
I love it. So full circle. Also, I could just imagine. Can you imagine it? Young Elliot, 18-year-old Elliot walks in. It's like, I've got something to say.
Yes. The Jerry Blank moment, as I call
exactly.
it.
Oh,
yes, it's true. I dressed like her too, basically. My goal in college was like to look as crazy as humanly possible. I don't know why, but I looked like something was truly, I'm not going to use the word, but I looked, there looked like there was something wrong with me in the way that I dressed. It was like beyond just like
vintage. Could
you give
me an example of an ensemble?
Just like, I got a pair of jeans and I was like, I got to spray paint these jeans. And I spray painted them like pink and green. And I don't know what was happening with me. I don't know what was happening, but I straight ironed my hair and pretended I didn't. So people would be like, wow, your hair looks cool. And I'm like, yeah, just a normal hair. And it's like, what? You look like you're in an anime cartoon, Elliot. You have Jewish hair and it's like flat ironed. I'm like, yeah, just normal hair. It's like, I have no idea what that identity crisis was, but I'm glad it's over.
wait, hold on. Okay. We're right at the end. Question though. When did that identity crisis resolve itself? When were you done with the spray painting of your jeans?
Honestly, I think it really was like pretty much after college, but especially once I started doing like stand up and improv and sketch, I was like, oh, you know, I don't want to, I really shouldn't be somebody who's like distracting people with my weird clothes. Like, I'm not going to do that. But do you guys know Ashley Besgin?
Mm-mm.
She was stand-up in New York who I think you actually would love. She's so funny. But she was in the acapella group with me, and she also dressed like a maniac, but has evolved to this day where her looks, she serves uh-huh, these looks.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that is how you, like, we did it together in acapella, and now years later, she's doing it perfectly. And she, like me, was like, oh, I'm just, she does stand up. And she was like afraid of distracting with her looks on stage. So even she said she would go on stage wearing like bad, like khakis. And she knew that was like the wrong turn to take. But ultimately, yeah, I was like, I gotta get out of this zone of needing to wear like goofy clothes. And it really wasn't until I started going up on stage a bunch that I was like, okay, time to dress like a person. Now's the time.
Elliot, this was a beautiful moment in time.
Well, thank you. I love it. I love it.
Thank you so much for coming to visit us. Yeah. This was really magical.
It was a joy just to see your face.
I know.
And yours too, and yours.
You're looking well.
Thank you.
All right, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.